Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with the outstanding executive, or at least producer and engineer of the program, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board. It is Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, 6 now past the hour of 12 noon. Welcome into the program.
Did Aaron just get demoted on air? Holy cow.
Oh,
is my mic on? Sorry.
No, I think I almost got promoted on it.
Yes.
But anyway, here's what day it is.
Pump day!
That's fantastic. There we go. There you go. No, I said executive producer, and he's producer, but it does, you know, whatever. Tomato, tomato. There's, you know.
Okay. But don't you love when people play with those titles, you know, editor versus editor?
Right?
Well, that's what they did with me one year.
They're did
like,
they
you're
really?
Now the found you're now the founding editor. I'm like, okay, that makes me sound really old, but sure, I'll go with it.
Did they give you a wig that go
that's founding father. I think I get that later this year when I turn 60. Then you get the powdered wig and everything.
But so. See, you don't need it. You have a beautiful shorn locks up there. I'm the one that needs a wig.
Shorn locks. I like that. And yeah, they're getting, you know, grayer by the day over here. But, you know, beats the alternative. I'm still absolutely upright and taking nourishment.
Pat Kreitlow, the host of Up North News Radio, every morning from 6 until 8. Always appreciate him stopping by the program.
Apparently Trigvy got even more demoted. Oh, wait, there he is. Okay. I just figured Todd was just bumping us all off one by one, and Trigvy was playing the role of Mo Green over here or something. So
he is playing the role of Aaron Jones. He just got traded to another program.
No.
Yeah. Trigvy Olson joins us from the beautiful capital of Washington, D.C. As he does, he's the senior editor. Now I've got editor in my brain. The senior advisor of the Lincoln Project. Trigvy,
right.
How the heck are you?
I'm sorry, I was having a little bit of technical difficulties. I would never pull an Aaron Jones or Brett Favre and go to the rival station, Todd.
Thank you.
I know you would. Gentlemen, do you want to start with sports, or do you want to start with that story? Because Kreitlow and I talked about it on his program this morning on Up North News Radio. Pat, first you, then Trigvy. What of this goofy news yesterday that Robert Kennedy Jr. is allegedly looking at former Packer, now Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and Jesse the Body Ventura, former pro wrestler and governor of Minnesota, as his running mate? Pat Kreitlow?
Yes, there are things that can be said about it. I'm going to be the bad guy right out of the gate and say, I don't even want to talk about this, because every one of these things serves somebody's role as a distraction.
Yeah.
That we are not talking about the differences that Joe Biden made as president. We are not talking about the harm Donald Trump would do whenever we go out and do a little bit of the sideshow. Now, yeah, we're going to do it. Obviously, I get that. But I just want that caveat out there that I'm going to be the old sourpuss who says, eyes on the prize, kids. Which one had the better record, Biden or Trump, when they were president? And again, I'm old enough. I anchored the news the night Jesse Ventura won the Minnesota governorship, and I was beside myself. I could barely speak on air. So I'm ready to go through this again, and probably with the same thing happening. It's a lot of attention. It's a lot of celebrity, but nothing gets done in the end.
Yeah, I agree. Trigvy Olson, Kennedy, Aaron Rodgers, or Jesse Ventura have less than a 0.5% chance of actually winning, correct?
But it's not zero.
Yeah, very little, but they can impact the race. I mean, there's that. I think it's kind of funny because, as Pat will remember, Jesse Ventura's lieutenant governor was a woman named Mae Schrunk, who was a teacher from like Fargo or something, you know, or Moorhead. Yeah, like, this is, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But I suspect, you know, in the work that I did abroad, oftentimes you'd see these Trojan horse candidates that are about siphoning votes off. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Pat 100%. This is a huge distraction from the choice that American voters have, democracy or autocracy. Joe Biden, if you want democracy, Donald Trump, if you want autocracy.
And don't forget the vanity role in all of this as well, because just this morning, there's another headline. NBA superstar Steph Curry says maybe about speculation he might run for president someday. Could we please have people serving as president who can actually do the job and stop making this a celebrity contest? I know that's too much to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Thank you so very much for asking, Pat Kretlow. So
One thing on Steph Curry. I think if Steph Curry decides to go into politics and actually build a career like Bill Bradley did, that's a different thing than Aaron Rodgers going to pluck him off the Jets roster to run. And Steph Curry does some real serious, like, he has taken on some issues. I was reading about that. I think if he wants to pursue politics when he's done playing, the idea that you go from the NBA to president of the United States is ridiculous. But
here's a hitherto unknown fact. Apparently, in the big trade deal with the Jets, Goody put in a line that if he is selected and elected vice president, Packers get two more first-round draft choices. So you got that. So that's fantastic. We're looking forward to that. Let's talk about something a bit more serious. And Pat, as a former news anchor yourself, I want your take on this first. Because what I've been amazed with the testimony of former prosecutor Robert Hur yesterday in the House Judiciary Committee, that we heard for all kinds of mainstream media talking about this report or his report when he first said it, from the podium, that Biden was an elderly man with memory problems. And that got a lot of play. What has not gotten a lot of play in the last 24 hours, including on CBS this morning, was the fact that he was lying. And this is all a sham. And I wanted to play this first cut, Mr. Sommers. This is, we're going to go down to Congresswoman Dean yesterday, a Democrat, taking on Robert Hur specifically on this point that Hur had said or claimed that President Biden could not remember the date of his son's death, Beau Biden. Here's the, we don't have time?
You did not send it to me.
Oh, well, all right, there's that.
Well I can see where that would be an impediment, but.
All right, this is what happens when we try to produce the show 10 minutes before we go on. But anyway, Pat Kretlow, what's your take on this? Because the congresswoman nailed Hur's rear end on this.
Well, and as did Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell in pointing out that there were things in the transcript of Hur's interview with the president where he says things like, you have a photographic memory, and yet that observation somehow didn't make it into his final report, which, again, just underscores what a partisan hit job that it was and is not to be taken seriously. Just like the testimony of the two Wisconsin members of that committee yesterday, both Scott Fitzgerald and Tom Tiffany were arguably one was more embarrassing than the other. And in the way that, again, they're working so hard to push this Biden crime family narrative, oblivious to what's been going on all around the Trump family, to the point where now the Trump family actually runs the RNC. So yeah. This whole thing, I think, is going to get into our rearview mirror rather quickly.
Trigvy?
The Hur thing, that guy pulled off quite an accomplishment because he was getting beat up by both the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think that says sort of anything about where he was at. He also had this weird thing. Did you notice when he was thinking, he'd look up in the air and his eyes would roll back in his head. Did either of you catch that? It was really weird.
I missed that one.
He was answering these. That guy is a hack for sure.
And I just think it's appalling that you would use that opportunity. And also the fact, and I was looking at something else, Pat, so forgive me if you said this earlier, but the fact that Jim Jordan coordinated it with Hur, that he resigned from Department of Justice 24 hours before he took the stand so that he could do so as a private citizen versus as a DOJ employee, where he would have had to have everything reviewed by DOJ.
Oh, I had not heard that. That is extremely interesting, and how very convenient for the Republicans, for the chair, and for the members of that committee. And by convenient, I mean corrupt as all get out.
Yeah, it's and again, the damage has been done, right? A lot of this damage, because what got all the play was the salacious headline when Hur said, yeah, we're not going to indict him, but he's an elderly man with a bad memory. And that's what made all the headlines. And the cleanup in aisle three never gets the headlines, never gets the airtime. So it's a lot more difficult for the Biden folks to get the truth out than the original lie.
Well, always has been. What's the old saying? You know, a lie can get halfway around the world while the truth is still putting on its shoes. And, you know, they have played that strategy so very well, so very much to successful outcomes far too often. And it simply makes it that much more incumbent upon, you know, me and you and Trigvi and everybody else to, you know, make those corrections where possible and make them adamantly and make sure people understand that, you know, there's a real record that needs to be corrected for voters before they go into any voting booth.
Before we let you go, Pat, a couple of minutes here. We talked about this on your show this morning. In the state capitol here, the state senate, Devin Lemieux, took up a number of Governor Evers' appointments, shot them down, effectually firing several people, Board of Regents and others. What gives here? I mean, one of the people, not this round, but I think the last week, they shot down former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton. A lieutenant governor, for God's sake. Republicans don't even want to put her on a commission.
No, they don't. And they'll make up some reasons for some folks. They did for a couple of the firings yesterday. But I think the thing that was more troubling to me was that there were some others where they didn't offer a reason. Democrats would stand on the floor and say, why are you firing this person? And no Republican would stand and make remarks. And it reminds me of how, for example, right now in the Menominee Falls School District, you know, where they banned 33 books last year, the conservative candidates have refused for the second year in a row to take part in a public forum. It's this very silent kind of activity that really concerns me, that we should be talking about and make sure that people understand what they're doing, even if they don't want to talk about why they're doing things like firing good men and women from serving the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'll stand corrected, but I believe if I read the votes right, I think only Rob Coles from the Green Bay area was the only Republican to even vote in favor of a couple of those appointments. So
somebody's got some integrity still on that side.
Yeah, once in a while, right? Even a blind squirrel. Mm-hmm. Pat Kreitlow, you can always find the truth every morning, 6 to 8 on Up North News Radio. We appreciate you. Thanks for stopping by. More Trigvi after this.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Tallaball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 20 now past hour of 12 noon. Mr. Zomerman, some pretty dramatic music there.
It's the soundtrack from the classic movie Ben-Hur.
Oh, really? Been a while. A minute since I watched Ben-Hur.
Yeah, same here. But I couldn't help it. Talking about Robert Hur, at some point, it was going to happen just because...
Let me tell you. Robert
Hur. All right, Zomers, trivia question. Who is the star of Ben-Hur?
Oh, I can't remember. I should know this, but I...
See if we have a caller who knows.
I'd have to think too hard about it.
No cheating.
I was just about to cheat.
No cheating.
No cheating.
Welcome back to the show. Let's go to the text line and off of YouTube or what have you. Some comments coming in here talking about that first segment. Our ongoing contributor, Mr. Jeff Perry, checks in on Facebook and says... speaking of before we were talking about Robert Kennedy Jr. considering Aaron Rodgers as a running mate, says, quote, is there any truth to the rumor that Marianne Williamson is planning to choose as her running mate Slater from Saved by the Bell? Well, I think Mario.
No, Jeff, there's no truth. No
Mario
truth
Lopez
to that.
Paid
it's
that.
Tiffany.
Right?
No, it's Tiffany Amber Thiessen that's under consideration from Saved by the Bell.
Well, there you go. It is pretty good. Anything else, Mr. Sommers, off the lines there? Andrew in Maine says Ben-Hur's star is Ben.
But no, I know.
Good guess, okay. But no.
I know that it's the same guy who did a lot of biblical movies like...
Charlton Heston?
Yes. That's him.
Is that correct?
That is exactly right.
I could picture him. I could think of other movies he's been in. I just couldn't think of the name.
There you go. The late, great Charlton Heston.
I'm telling you, Zomers, it's why we need a cultural program with you and I. It will have to be overnights, but it would be good.
We'll work on that.
I don't think that Civic would put us on the air for that unless it was from like midnight to 2, but we could do it.
We could do it.
We can make it happen, or you guys can. I'm not sure. Apparently now Todd's fingers have gotten things correct here. I believe we've gotten this cut now. This is Congresswoman Dean questioning and talking to Robert Herr, the former prosecutor of the Department of Justice, on this interview, 5.5 hours with President Biden, when the transcript scripts finally got released within the last 24 to 48 hours and people actually got to look at what happened, not take Robert Herr's word for it. Here is Congresswoman Dean going head-to-head with Robert Herr.
And I want to give you a chance, since the transcript is out, to correct the record on an important point. Very sadly, your report on page 208 says that Mr. Biden couldn't come up with the date, the year of his son, Beau Biden's death, when in fact in the transcript it shows that you asked him the month. And do you know what he said, Mr. Herr? He said, oh, God, May 30th. Would you like to correct the record? His memory was pretty firm on the month and the day.
Congresswoman, I don't believe that's correct with respect to the transcript, but if you could refer me to a specific page, I'd be happy to look.
And my second document, to clarify for you, sir, Mr. Herr, from the transcription, page 82, the words are President Biden's. What month did Beau die? Oh, God. May 30th, a searing memory. I ask unanimous consent.
Without objection.
And I want to give you.
So there you go. Literally, the congresswoman had to get out the transcript. And even there, under oath and for the committee, Trigvi, Herr was still going to lie about it until it was there in black and white, proving that President Biden knew exactly not only what month, but what day his son died.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I struggle with remembering when it was exactly that my dad died, even the year, and I'm 56, right? And I'll share on a more personal note, we lost our first child, and I know it was in July, and I know it was 2006, but sometimes I struggle with that too. It was the 23rd, I think. Mm-hmm. These kinds of things, it's hard to remember the exact dates of those things. And Joe Biden did know the exact date of it. It was a total gotcha thing that he was trying to do with this.
And I always appreciate you being so forthright and vulnerable and talking about your personal stories. As someone who has gone through the tragedy of losing a child, doesn't it just take on a special kind of sickness for a guy like Herr to manipulate a tragedy like losing a child and try to take political advantage of that?
Yeah, it's horrible. And honestly, I understood when Biden said the next day that he was angry about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would make me angry if someone were to try and use that in a political way. The scar that gets left from the loss of a child, and quite honestly, for me, you know, Joe Biden and I might not agree on some things politically, but that when he talks about losing his both Beau and his kids that he lost at an early age, about the same age I was when we lost Vilta, he does it in such a compassionate way. You know, and I've seen video that isn't the kind of thing you see in public as much, and maybe the Biden campaign needs to do a better job of this, where he talks to others who have lost children and says, you know, hopefully one day you need to keep in mind, one day you'll reach a point where the memories don't make you cry. They make you smile. Yeah. And this guy doing that, absolutely shameless.
We have one more cut, Mr. Zomers. We have time for the Solwell cut. This is Congressman Solwell, again, questioning Robert Herr yesterday, speaking of the president's memory.
I now want to turn you to the transcript and
day one, page 47. You said to President Biden, you appear to have a photographic understanding and recall of the House. Did you say that to President Biden?
Those words do appear on page 47 of the transcript.
Photographic is what you said. Is that right?
That word does appear on page 47 of the transcript.
Never appeared in your report, though. Is that correct? The word photographic?
That does not appear in my report.
Trivia again. Congressman Solwell had to just pull this out, and even all he'll acknowledge is the truth in the transcript. I mean, how you can believe anything that he put in this report or what he said from it? After yesterday, this guy is a hatchet job. It's a Trump Republican hatchet job on Joe Biden.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think they want to build a narrative. Okay, so let me tell you something about the Trump campaign. So Chris LaCivita, who's running the Trump campaign, and is now going to be running the RNC at the same time. Chris and I've worked on back in the day when I still was a Republican, quite a few campaigns. And Chris's modus operandi, he ran Ron Johnson's campaign against Mandela Barnes. Chris's modus operandi, and this is going to be the modus operandi of the Trump campaign, is you don't attack the weaknesses of the other candidate. You look where your weaknesses are and their strengths are, and you attack their strengths. And I believe, although he's never said it to me because we don't really talk a lot anymore for obvious reasons, but I believe, and when I put my hat on trying to think of how the Trump campaign is going to see things, they understand that their weakness is Donald Trump is off the rails and is failing mentally to do the job. So you go at Joe Biden on that issue.
Back with more on the other side with Trigvi Olson, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Don't go anywhere. It's the Todd Lyle Show for a Wednesday on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Lyle Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 12 noon on this Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. Trigvi Olson, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, like myself, a former Republican, like myself, has left for his own reasons. And here we are every Wednesday on the Redemption Tour. Or maybe something like that. Where the details.
The Redemption Tour is going to happen soon, Todd. We might want to make up t-shirts.
I know, right? I was going to say where details are still finalization in the works, but Trigvi and I plan to be out and about across the state of Wisconsin, maybe as soon as next month, and we're putting some final details on that. And when we have it, we'll let everybody know. But looking forward to that, Trigvi.
Even middle-aged boys like to go out and about a little bit. Particularly in Wisconsin. Might involve some beers, some cheese curds, a little talk about the Packers, talk about politics, out and about.
So speaking about out and about, I wanted to share a little anecdote, a little story, if I might, Trigvi, and I want your take on this because you came up last night. I went and had dinner and a beverage with a very good friend of mine and his lovely girlfriend. I will not disclose the name of the individuals, but they are young. Most of my friends are younger than me because when you're a single man with no kids, you like to have young friends. They'll take care of you when you're old.
Right.
And we at one point last night, I said, "Well, think what could happen in 30 years from now." And my friend looked at me. He goes, "You'll be dead." I'm like, "Wait a minute here." He goes, "84? You're not going to make it to 84." And I'm like, "Well, Jude, please, thanks for the. I guess I better live fast." Huh? But anyway, that was the main part of the story. What was very interesting is you know, later in the evening, the focus or the conversation kind of shifted to politics, and his girlfriend is a young woman who she's I think around 30. And has an engineering degree from a university here in Wisconsin. Is successful. He's successful as well. And we got talking. And she said something really interesting, Trigvi. And I'll shorten this story simply that about a year or two ago, they were at she and contemporaries of her, people their late 20s, early 30s, all professionals, were at some sort of a professional retreat. And they'd had a couple of beverages. And, of course, people get more honest after that. And somehow elections came up. And they slowly all told one another, basically confessed, that all of them, there was like a dozen of these people, had voted third party last time around. And they talked, and she said, we all basically like, we feel so ashamed. Like, we feel like we can't tell people that we voted other than the main parties because we'll get shamed. And when we talked about the frustration she feels, she's certainly not a Trump person, but she gets frustrated with the Democratic Party as well. And it kind of went further into the evening. And at the end of the night, she said, my friend is probably is going to vote Biden. Not super excited about it, but he's going to vote for Biden. She, at the end of the day, said, you know, the more I think about this and the more I reflect, for me, it will probably come down to how terrible things could be for women under another Trump term. And that may be enough to make me vote for a major party, the Democrats, simply on that alone. Your name mm-hmm. came up talking about
Red Dawn Conservatives and Dobbsets.
Yeah. So I wonder, what are your thoughts on, is she reflective of the types of people who are going to decide this election in 2024? And what's your takeaway?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, we call them Dobbsdads, but it really is Dobbsdads and Democracy First Moms. And you know, the labels of them are more to sort of give people a first blush understanding. There is a segment of the population, both male and female, in their 30s, and they may or may not have kids yet, right? That Dobbsdads, you know, they're not going to vote for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. It's a question of, do they vote again, as they most of them did last time, for Joe Biden? And Joe Biden needs to get somewhere 70-80% of those Dobbsdads in Wisconsin, of which there's 70 or 80,000 of them. Dobbsdads, Democracy First Moms. I think they make, you know, the point that they make that's really important is they need to be convinced, not shamed, into voting for Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think the political operative class and the two parties, with every election being the most important of their lifetime and, you know, trying to shame people into how they vote, make them, is really counterproductive. We found some of our most effective ads for those audiences in 2022 were actually ones that were about convincing, not about shaming.
I think that's fascinating. And we found the same thing in our conversation last night. She said, well, yeah, the more I guess I think about this, it's just, as much as I'm not excited about it. And here's the thing. Have you heard this in your research and polling and whatnot? She said, there's a bunch of us that want to see change, like a true, like right choice voting or an alternative other than the two parties that have been there seemingly forever. But they're like, mm-hmm. she said, it's like, we are so frustrated because we're always told, you know, it's like, you know, Little Orphan Annie, the sun will come out tomorrow. You know, wait till tomorrow, right. tomorrow, tomorrow. And right. it's their feeling is, at what point does it going to really happen? And I said, well, I think it will happen another election cycle or two. But if we don't have a representative democracy, it won't happen.
Well, I mean, the challenge, I wrote a memo once that kind of within a certain crowd is somewhat legendary. And it was based off of my work overseas more than anything. You know, what you have to understand about the two-party system in the United States is it's a duopoly, right? Mm. And it has existed for 150 years, and it hasn't been challenged in over 100, really, other than Ross Perot. Our research, you know, there is the chunk in the middle that desires something else strongly is about 26%, right? The problem is both parties are bigger than that. And so if you run a third party candidate, you know, a third party candidate very well, people who don't vote for Joe Biden, who are concerned about Donald Trump and democracy, end up in essence casting a vote for Donald Trump,
right? By
casting that third party vote. Mm-hmm. I think there are some systematic fixes. Fusion voting is one of them, where you would be able to have alternative parties. You used to have it in the state of Wisconsin up until about 1900, and is how the Republican Party came into existence. It was actually a fusion party, ranked choice, jungle primaries. There's lots of potential structural things. I think, you know, the reality is, and I don't want to be the little boy who cried wolf like, you know, political parties have been, yeah. But this truly is the most important election that people will have ever voted in. And that's not hyperbole that you get in all these other elections from the two parties. It truly is, because this is a race between one candidate who foundationally believes in the win-win of democracy and the goodness and rightness and the imperfections of America, and another in Donald Trump, who is a zero-sum actor who would like control to take revenge, to hold power for enrichment and all the rest that goes with it.
It's so interesting.
We have not had an election of this magnitude.
It's so interesting you brought that phrase up, the cry wolf, because this 30-year-old woman that I was with my friend last night, we were talking, this conversation, she literally brought up, she said, it just feels like they always cry wolf. You know, they always tell us, this is the most important election. Oh, this is the most important election. I said, I totally get that. I respect it. And you're right. And I said, part of that blame lies on guys like me who worked and perpetuated this. But I said, based on my years of experience, I can tell you this really is the most important. I said, I know it sounds weird, but it truly is. Yeah. Off the text.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, so go ahead.
I said, off the text line right now, Angie from Monroe says, this was me. I could not vote for Hillary because she's corporate. If I had my way, I would have had Bernie. But Biden is not going, is not doing bad with the cards he's been dealt, unquote. I think there's a lot of people that feel this way out there, Trigvi.
Well, here's the thing that always kind of gets me. I have a Facebook friend who was at her fifth birthday party and whatever. She's active in Republican politics. And she's constantly doing this, we the people, we the people, we the people. Mm. And it always makes me kind of, you know, the right does it all the time, and she's just amplifying that. The thing is that gets missed is we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, right? Like they always leave out the more perfect union.
Right.
We will never reach, and I think the founding fathers understood this, we'll never reach a perfect union. It just doesn't exist. But we can aspire to it. And the difference between we the people without the more perfect union is just anarchy of everyone doing what they want rather than to the aspiration. And so we have to understand that every candidate is going to be imperfect. There's lots of things in Joe Biden's State of the Union address that as a conservative, I disagreed with. I don't necessarily agree with, but I understand that the choice is Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And I can tell you that at the only level that it matters, are they committed to the Constitution of the United States? Will they demonstrate fidelity to it? Donald Trump has proven that he won't. Mm-hmm. On January 6th is not talked about what happened on January 6th. And I think it's a fair point to say not enough time has been spent talking about what happened as it relates to in the aftermath of George Floyd in places like Madison, Wisconsin. And so we have to start having an honest conversation about that aspiration towards a perfect union. But there's a big difference between trying to take down the Constitution in the United States of America, which happened on January 6th, and the general lawlessness that was seen in the aftermath of George Floyd. And I will tell you, as somebody who grew up just outside of the Twin Cities, I was incredibly sympathetic to what happened to George Floyd. And my sister, who lives in St. Paul, was too. But at the same time, it really didn't make her very happy when the Target in her neighborhood got looted and destroyed.
Yeah.
Right? We have to have an honest conversation.
Off the text line, this is Tom in Florida says, quote, we find it hard to accept, but the two-party system is over. It really is the Trump party now, not just ideologically, but officially and financially. People who identify as Republican no longer have a party, unquote. We saw the Don Jr. came out over the weekend, said exactly that. Said the Republican Party is dead. He called it out. He said that. Said it's the MAGA party now. That's all it is. I agree with that text, Trigby.
I would say we still have a two-party system. We just have the Democratic Party and the MAGA Party.
Yeah.
Right. So there's two. It is a two-party system. That said, if we have any Trump listeners who are listening, I know you like to be informed. I think you should do some digging on the people who are actually not the North Carolina State Party chair or Laura Trump, but the people who actually are going to be running the RNC. All of them have deep ties to Mitch McConnell.
Right.
And they're getting rid of all these people who were there under Ronna Romney McDaniel. There's this perception that that they're cleaning house and putting in Trump people, but every single one of those, I know all those people because I used to work with them.
That's
is ironic.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
Really are they is. Really with you, or is this really the deep state of the Republican Party taking over?
855-752-4842. Let's go quickly to the phone lines. Gene and Eau Claire. Gene, always a pleasure. About a minute left. It's all yours.
Okay, I got a quick question for Trigby, and that is, mm-hmm. you know, I've been watching this for a long time, and Donald Trump never could have done, and you've answered some of my question here, done the things that he had done, gotten away with it, if it hadn't been okayed by those, you know, in power behind the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Will we ever know who these people are? I mean, there's got to be suits. There's got to be, you know... Is there multinational ties, multinational corporations? Because, you know, a lot of this stuff with authoritarianism has happened, you know, kind of simultaneously in significant areas in the world. Is this deeper and stronger than what we imagined?
Hey, Gene, hang on the line. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have you re-ask it on the other side. How's that for a 60-second cliffhanger? Trigby Olson, Lincoln Project Senior Advisor, will come back and answer that and more. Don't go anywhere. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 10 before the hour of 1 o'clock on Wednesday, March 13th. As per usual on a Wednesday, Trigby Olson, Senior Advisor at the Lincoln Project, joins us, like myself, a former Republican who left the party and is now fighting for democracy, not only in the U.S., but around the world. And right now, I'm going to welcome in back one of our great callers. Our callers are really... what it helped make this program. We appreciate everybody listening, no more so than Gene in Eau Claire. Gene, restate your question quickly, please. I want to get an answer from Trigby because it's a great one.
Okay, and I don't know how to make it real concise because it's a big pattern that happened with Scott Walker, and then, you know, and then it moved up to our federal government. So I'm going to try to stay in the federal government because I've watched the government for years live, and I've never seen what I've seen, and it's real alarming. And I could never imagine that any of the senators, Republican, Democrats, could put up with what Donald Trump has done. And I don't understand who's behind it, because Trump would never, ever have gotten away with what he's doing without the acceptance of those with the R after their name. I don't understand what's going on. Maybe you have an idea. And it, you know, in the multinational corporations. Mm-hmm. Now I noticed, you know, I saw Bannon over, you know, because I watch live and I see other countries too. Bannon, you know, over, you know, when Brexit was going on,
right.
and his ties over in other countries. And I thought, God, this is going on. Well, at the same time, you know, because I'm trying to figure out what in the devil's going on here. Do you have any idea, you know, who may be behind this? Because it's beyond belief.
Thanks, Gene. Really appreciate the call. Trigby?
So, I mean, a couple of things. You know, Donald Trump, like any autocratic actor, there are people that ended up enabling.
Right.
And the capitulation of the party to Donald Trump really was a process. Lindsey Graham is an example of this. You know, right. Republicans are going to get killed, blah, blah, blah. And now he's Trump's biggest cheerleader and appeasing him. And there's lots of others. You know, the enablers and the appeasers is kind of a natural path. I think, you know, is it a big multinational thing? I think a lot of it at the end of the day is there was this assumption, and I remember being part of it, about the technological revolution, the internet technology, you know, our mobile phones, right?
Right.
There was this idea that it was all about empowering individuals. But what has failed to be recognized is it also empowered bad actors. It's not just, you know, technology is agnostic. Mm-hmm. And we have a system where people kind of have gotten globally to a place where there's so much information. And it's really, and there's so many people putting out information, false information, real information, that people don't know what to believe. So the easiest way is to default to who is someone who I can believe in, and then I'll just believe everything that they believe. Yeah. And I think that more than anything is what has really empowered Trump. Now, there's appeasers, there are enablers, there are rich people in the Republican Party who decided to back him. But the truth of the matter is most of those people, when you get them in a closed room, really don't like Donald Trump. But they all have their reasons for justifying their support of them.
855-752-4842. Let's go quickly to Wisco. Paul, Wisco, you're on. You have a question or a comment about Citizens United. You're on.
Thanks for taking my call, Todd. And thanks, Jeannie. You brought up a lot of good questions there. It started in my lifetime with the Tea Party movement and Scott Walker here in a state like Jeannie said, but I think the real game changer was Citizens United, and now you have a corrupt Supreme Court. Yeah. So just your opinion. Thanks.
Thanks, Wisco.
I think Citizens United, you know, has opened Pandora's box to a degree, but I think it's for a different reason. Whether it was ruled correctly or not is hard for me to say because I'm not a constitutional scholar. But what I would say is it really took power away from political parties and transferred it to operative class people. And that might sound ironic, right? But it's just the nature of what it became. Outside groups rather than parties.
We're in the speed round here, Trigby. 855-752-4842. Go back to the hometown, Richland Center. Listening in on WRCE in Richland Center. Alan, you got about a minute and a half left. It's all yours. Go ahead.
I have a question. Using the Electoral College and using a ranked choice of two choices when you vote. You vote for your first choice and your second choice. If you choose to, don't have to. Okay.
Yep.
And then that this would give third party people, when you vote for the third party, you feel more comfortable, you're not wasting your vote. Just a thought, just your thoughts on that.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it. Trigby?
I think ranked choice voting is something that has to be explored. I think fusion voting is something that definitely has to be explored. I will say jungle primaries. I think the reality is, with ranked choice, and I've worked in a lot of states now that have it, Alaska certainly, Maine to a little lesser degree, and then internationally, you know, a lot of European countries have ranked choice essentially. Mm-hmm. The hard part about ranked choice is at its outset, it's kind of confusing for voters. Mm-hmm. That's the downside of it. The upside of it is exactly the point that's being made. It ultimately gives a way to express displeasure, but still not have that protest vote end up helping the candidate that you like least.
Yeah, absolutely. We've come to almost the end. I saved you a couple minutes, Trigvi, because I want to get your take as a Packer owner. Gutekunst, did he get rid of Aaron Jones at just the right time or too early?
I am sad to see Aaron Jones go because by all accounts, Aaron Jones is a fantastic human being. But I would also say that it is a young man's game, Todd. And Josh Jacobs is a young man who serves two capacities. I'm sad to see Aaron Jones go to the Vikings, sort of like Favre. But it is what it is. Speaking of young men's game, Todd, yep. when you said about how old you feel, and I know we have a former Wisconsin goalie who listens.
Yes.
He will.
Let me read you this quick. Oh, it says, Trigg, did you see that Minnesota Wild pulled the goalie during a 3-on-3 sudden death overtime and won the game? You got 1 minute left. Go ahead.
I did not see that. I need to go see that. But I actually thought about our listener because I was playing in an old men's hockey game over the weekend, and we were down, and I decided to take the puck to the net, and I ran into a guy who was the size of a tree, who it didn't end very well for Trigby. And after the game, I said to the guy, we were walking out of the arena, I said, you were like running into a tree. That's hard on an old guy like me. He said, you're not that old. You're in your mid-40s. I said, don't, man. I'm 56. You can't do that to me.
That's fantastic. Back with hour 2. Thanks, Trivi. Don't go anywhere.